Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Father Daniel, we just passed the 250th birthday celebration for the United States. How did you celebrate?
Well, I was with my family in Arkansas. We had a wonderful time and a hillbilly 4th of July. And then I spent a couple days with you. We did that father-son camping trip in North Carolina, which was a great time.
The beautiful mountains of Western Carolina.
That's right.
We'll start this week's show talking about the country of Holland. In a first, a terminally ill child under the age of 12 was euthanized in the Netherlands, 2 years after a change to that country's assisted dying laws that would allow this killing of children under the age of 12.
Wow.
Euthanasia was already legal for babies under the age of 1 in the Netherlands and for children over the
Isn't
age of 12.
Isn't that called infanticide?
Infanticide, exactly.
Killed children? Yeah.
And for children over the age of 12. But in 2024, the Dutch government legalized euthanasia for children, for all children, basically.
Hmm.
Okay? They had excluded between age 1 and 12
mm-hmm.
previously. So in these cases, it's realistically up until a certain age, the decision of the parents.
But in this specific case, was this a decision of the child or of the parents?
No, it was of the parents. It was a terminally ill child, mm-hmm. and the parents were choosing to end the child's suffering. So what I wanted to talk about here is, okay, so first of all, the Netherlands is not the first country to legalize euthanasia for kids. Belgium has already been doing this for mm-hmm. some years. What I think about in this case is the parents' culpability. So their consent was necessary before carrying out this killing.
Right.
Okay. So I'm sure they were motivated by a desire to end their child's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
They were also, I'm sure, being told by their trusted physicians inside a legal and medical system that has spent over 20 years normalizing this practice, because euthanasia has been legal in Holland since 2002.
Right.
So the institutional and cultural drift surely had an impact on their decision making, but ultimately, I mean, this was a joint choice between the parents and the doctors, but initially it has to be spearheaded by the parents, I would
mm-hmm.
think, right? No one would
be. I don't know how the law is written in the Netherlands.
Okay, but I can't imagine that doctors would be the ones who initially are asking the question about whether this child should be put down.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe,
but what happens in the United States right now? I hear this anecdotally from couples all the time. You know, the doctors discover a genetic defect in the child, and the doctors initiate a conversation with
the parents about abortion. Yes.
But it's
the parents' decision. That's where I'm going here. It's the parents' decision. The doctors suggest it, but it's the parents' decision.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to ask you is this some sort of a diminished capacity moral culpability? Okay, so this is a killing. There's no other way to describe
it. It's murder.
But do the parents, because of this cultural shift in places like Belgium and in the Netherlands, and these doctors who they're trusting, who are advising them that this is the right thing to do, is there a diminished capacity element, do you think? Or is this just flat out, they're no different than them?
No, it is different. There's a mitigated responsibility. You know, in Catholic morality, you always look at three elements: the object, the end, and the circumstances. The circumstances here in this case have shifted because with the legal reality, with the shift in culture within the country of Holland, it has mitigated the responsibility of the parents. But it doesn't eliminate it, because the end and the object are still morally wrong in this case. And the greatest moral weight comes from the actual object. What is the thing that's happening? Okay, so there's a murder taking place. Natural law is still in place. This general sense that people have of what's right and what's wrong is not displaced by the laws. So even if the circumstances have shifted, the moral culpability still remains, and it's still a very grievous sin.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires.
The Supreme Court ruled that a Rastafarian prisoner cannot sue the guards who forcefully shaved his head while in custody in the state of Louisiana. The case was brought by a Louisiana inmate who served a 5-month prison sentence in the year 2020. He is an adherent of Rastafarianism. Rastafari's theological DNA grew out of an Abrahamic framework in Jamaica in the 1930s, and like many Rastafarians, this inmate believes his faith requires him to wear his hair in dreadlocks and not cut it, akin to the Hebrew Nazirite vow, which most people know from the Old Testament story of Samson. Louisiana requires prisoners to have short hair, but a 2017 court decision barred the state from cutting the hair of Rastafarians. Nonetheless, when this fellow found himself facing incarceration for 5 months on a drug charge, he handed prison guards a copy of that Supreme Court decision, but the guards threw it in the trash and shaved his head anyways. He had only 3 weeks left on his sentence when this happened. He had kept his dreadlocks uncut for 20 years as part of his vow. He couldn't sue the state of Louisiana for damages because of sovereign immunity, so he sued the prison officials personally. The Supreme Court basically said that, yes, state prison systems that take federal money essentially have a contract between them and the federal government, and part of that contract is that they must agree not to burden religious exercise. But individual prison guards aren't a party to that contract, and they can't be sued when they never personally accepted the terms like the state did. So basically, the court said that the state can't have policies that violate religious freedom, but individual employee behavior is outside the scope of that agreement and can't be enforced in the same way. Any thoughts on this?
Well, I'm not the lawyer, so here I would think that from a legal perspective, it seems like a splitting of hairs would be very difficult to sustain. Like, anyone who takes on a contract to work for an organization has to abide by the rules and protocols of that organization. So
but at the expense of being fired, not being sued for this contract between the state and the federal government that they're not parties to. I mean, I agree with the line of reasoning here, but there's another separate element here about the underlying actual substance of the case. So
I would leave to the lawyers the legal question of whether you can make that separation or not.
Yeah, I think these prison guards should have been fired. I mean, I don't think you can personally sue them for what they did. I think they just should be fired.
Potentially. But I think from a moral perspective, it's an interesting question as well. I mean, should we be respecting the religious beliefs of people? And I think as long as the religious beliefs of a person are not going against the common good or against something that's really, really important, they should be respected. So, for example, let's say we have some Satanists who think we should have child sacrifice and we should kill some children in a ritual sacrifice. Well, that's contrary to the common good, and that should not be allowed. We can very clearly say no, they can't have the religious freedom in that. But someone who has long hair in a prison situation, okay, is there an epidemic of lice going through the prison? Okay, in that case, yeah, maybe we need to cut everyone's hair short. But outside of that circumstance, I think you should respect the person's religious beliefs there.
Okay, so there are roughly 2 million people in the U.S. alone who are incarcerated. So what about all the other religious requirements? So take, for example, Catholic inmates and their Sunday obligation. So how would you say that there would need to be legally a structure where Mass is said in each prison everywhere across the country
every Sunday?
Every Sunday. Well, and all inmates would have to attend. And inmates could attend, rather.
Yeah, I think there could be some sort of an exception for that. And it might be watching it online, because realistically, you're not going to get a priest to go to every prison in this country.
But that doesn't satisfy your Sunday obligation.
It can if the bishop allows for it.
Okay, well then what about Jewish prisoners and the requirement that all their food be kosher? Or Muslim prisoners and the requirement that all of their food be halal? Or any other religious nuance. I have a difficult time practically figuring out how any of this would work. When you're in prison, the rules just change. You're in a different ecosystem. You're no longer...
You really are. Yeah, and a lot of your natural rights are taken away by the very fact of being in prison.
Well, I'm wondering if in fact, every prison did allow Catholic priests to come in and do mass, mm-hmm. would we even do it? I mean, I think that...
No, it's impossible.
But there's 2 million people incarcerated in the right. U.S., so it's a pretty, you know, they're not Catholic, not 2 million Catholics, mm-hmm. But what about other denominations where they conduct their services?
Well, you open up a broader question there, Chris, because how many of the people who are in prison are actually practicing religion? A lot of times they're in prison because they haven't been really observing any religion whatsoever, and they're not, you know, paying attention to God, and they've just become a god unto themselves, and they've taken liberties and broken the law in ways that are clearly godless.
Well, back to the Rastafarianism, I agree with your assessment. This fellow's hair should not have been cut. It wasn't an unreasonable, unless there is something
unless
medically.
Unless there was a lice right. outbreak in the jail.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. The San Francisco Giants baseball team held their annual Pride Night to honor the LGBTQ community. The celebration included 10 gay couples renewing their wedding vows and a drag queen standing along the first baseline at the stadium. Players wore a pride hat, a rainbow pride hat, but one pitcher chose to wear his regular Giants cap without the rainbow, and three players wore the pride hat, but next to the rainbow logo, they affixed the scriptural reference to Genesis referring to the rainbow as the symbol of God's covenant with humanity.
Mm-hmm.
The players were condemned as villains by the press for refusing to wear the hat and for defacing and desecrating the pride flag.
Interesting.
So contrast this incident with years ago when quarterback Colin Kaepernick kneeled in protest of the national anthem, and he was declared a national
hero.
Yeah, he won the Sports Illustrated Muhammad Ali Legacy Award and the GQ Citizen of the Year Award. But when a few Giants players quote the Bible, that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times condemned the silent protest as a tone-deaf response to what should have been a moment for community unity. The San Francisco Chronicle said Giants pitchers alienate the fans in San Francisco by defacing pride hats.
But meanwhile, ignoring the fact that the organization celebrating pride is alienating so many other people. I mean, it's just – it's a total media spin on a lot of these things. What's the narrative they're pushing? And I think this is where we got to have our eyes wide open and our ears like attuned to some of this goofy stuff that's going on.
Well, Major League Baseball, the – broader organization of MLB put the Giants players on notice, saying in a statement, "The writing on the hats violates our rules, and we have warned the players about future violations." So, you know, this is different than the NFL's response to mm-hmm. Colin Kaepernick, right? So, and the mess gets messier as a York, Pennsylvania-based minor league baseball team canceled their annual Pride game after several players on the team refused to wear the rainbow jerseys for the occasion. They didn't have enough players to play.
Mm-hmm.
The team nonetheless bowed to the movement by donating $10,000 to a local LGBTQ center that offers gender-affirming closets with access to prosthetics, undergarments, and gender-affirming whatever. I don't know.
Okay.
So out of the 30 Major League Baseball teams, only one team did not celebrate Pride Night. Can you guess which franchise?
It was one in Texas.
There you go. The Texas Rangers.
The Rangers.
Right. Instead of holding
not the Astros.
Instead of holding a Pride Night, they had a Faith and Family Night at the ballpark.
That's great.
Yeah. Right.
That probably met a lot more people and a lot more of their clientele.
It was probably a much broader appeal.
I would think so.
All right. So I want to look at this, though, from a totally different perspective.
Okay.
We've talked about in the past about Marxism being looked at as a religion. So if we stipulate that all societal norm rejection behavior, in this case, the rejection of heteronormativity, right, in the case of these Pride Nights,
mm-hmm.
okay, is rooted in Marxism. And if Marxism is, in fact, not
necessarily, I would challenge the assumption there. Not all of them are rooted in Marxism.
Right. No, it's not. I'm just saying this is for the case of this, what I want to talk about. I want to set this up that if you stipulate that is, because some people do believe that it is just all rooted in Marxism.
That all of what is rooted in
Marxism? All of this societal norm rejection is rooted in Marxism.
Well, let's go to the deeper root is the evil one. The one who rejects the order established by God.
Right.
And we know who that is. And he's been doing it in many guises all throughout history.
All right, but I want to go.
Marxism is one of those.
I want to go to Catholic social teaching, though, and I want to ask you something that's a little more pointed about this, this topic. Okay, so Catholic social teaching says a business's institutional purpose, not just individual employees' character, should be ordered toward human dignity and the common good.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
It's asking for businesses to have a purpose at the corporate level that is more than just profit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So similarly, you know that I don't watch any movies before, I think I've said to you before, that were made before the year 2000. After the year 2000.
You're missing out, Chris. There's a lot of great movies made after the year 2000.
I don't think so, but okay. So, but we've seen.
How would you know? You haven't even seen any of them.
Because when I watched the first 2 minutes, I realized that I'm being manipulated, and so I turn it off.
But at least you're aware that you're being manipulated.
So, this trend in the last 30-40 years of movie studios trying to manipulate you. So let's say that a movie studio has this societal norm rejection belief, and it's rooted in Marxism, mm-hmm. okay? And that they are, therefore, if Marxism is their religion, they are trying to advance a broader moral vision, the same way Catholic social teaching is asking businesses to advance a broader purpose than
sure.
just profit,
mm-hmm.
okay?
So, and that's actually one of the really attractive elements of Marxism and of socialism, because it posits a kind of utopian worldview of how we can save humanity and we can save the world through as an alternative to Christian worldview. So it is very attractive when you get into it, because it's going beyond individualism and selfishness to say, I'm part of a big movement of something that's doing something great.
Right. So aren't they doing what Catholic social teaching says
yes.
they should be doing? It's just that their religion is different.
No. Let's distinguish. Both systems, irregardless of what the Christian or the religious underpinnings are proposing something that surpasses individualism. So a Marxist worldview says that you're going to be part of this the state, you're going to be part of the advancement of the humanity, etc. Christianity also says that we need to live for something greater than ourselves, for the common good. That's where the similarities end.
But again, I asked at the beginning if we stipulate that Marxism is a religion. I don't believe
it
that to be the case.
Yeah.
But
well,
you
it's a secular religion.
A secular religion, right? With well, and as we talked about,
what is a religion? A religion is firmly held beliefs, practices, institutions that grow up from it. Marxism is clearly has all the trappings of a religion.
Right, and as we talked about in prior segments, they have their. In the beginning that everything was okay, that they had a communist utopia mm-hmm. and that the fall was the introduction of private property rights and capitalism mm-hmm. and the proletariat or the chosen people
mm-hmm.
and the communist utopia is the ideal that you're going to achieve at the end. So again, if this is their religion, this is what Catholic social teaching is telling you that you should do, is you should espouse what your religion is telling you as the broader purpose and not just profit. Which and so this is where I disagree with Catholic social teaching.
I think you're misunderstanding Catholic social teaching, because when you look at Catholic social teaching as simply a worldview that is surpassing the individual to go into the common good, you're missing the whole point of Catholic social teaching. Catholic social teaching is not just principles about private property, subsidiarity, solidarity, and the common good. It is rooted in the experience of Jesus Christ. This is the fundamental difference between Christianity and Catholicism and other worldviews like Marxism, which propose a way to organize the economics and the running of our society. It's rooted in the experience of Jesus Christ. And that's where, to his credit, I think Pope Francis and now Pope Leo have emphasize a key point, which is the foundation of Catholic social teaching, which is the experience of Christ and the dignity of the human person. I think that if you don't understand that,
which I 100% agree with, I just don't think that should be part of, that should be secondary to it, that should be the individual responsibility, not the business's responsibility. So let me just go with a quote from Milton Friedman.
Wait a second. But let me, before you give that quote, which I'm sure is a great one, let me distinguish there. So Is not the owner of a business also an individual?
Indeed.
And so his actions have moral ramifications.
Absolutely.
So in as much as he's the leader of the business and he acts on behalf of the business and sets the purpose of the business itself takes on a moral responsibility.
That's not what I'm saying. The business should always have a moral responsibility, but profit should be the highest responsibility and everything else comes second.
Totally disagree.
Okay, well, that's why that's what I'm saying. I disagree with Catholic social teaching on this matter. So, okay, Milton Friedman in 1970 said that the social responsibility of business is to increase profits, full stop, because managers imposing their own values through the firm are spending other people's monies on causes that those people never consented to. And there's no stopping point once you allow a, quote, broader purpose in. Every executive's pet cause becomes fair game. So I would go further and say...
So let me stop for a second. I agree with that in the sense that I agree that the leaders of an organization should not be putting in their pet preferences, pushing their narrative. Like, we started this segment with, like, you know, oh, let's going to go push Pride Month. I don't think businesses should be doing that. What I do think businesses should be doing is finding the purpose of their organization that ties into the common good. And this is the position of Catholic social teaching. Not that every, you know, let's say you're a Catholic owner of a business and now you should be pushing Catholic teaching on things. No, that's not what the church is saying. What the church is saying is to every organization, every business should be seeking the common good. And what is the common good? And this is the point where people get lost. They don't understand what Catholic social teaching is. The common good is not the highest good. It's not the same thing. You know, the highest, because that's Milton Friedman's quote, the highest good is profit for the company. Okay, whether or not I agree with that quote, that's a separate question. But the common good is not the highest good. Common good is not the greatest good for the greatest number. From other, you know, philosophical theories. No, the common good is the complete set of conditions that lead to the thriving of the human people.
I don't disagree with anything you just said, but if these movie studios are practicing the religion of Marxism, their common good is the advancement of gender ideology.
No. And that's where I think you might be getting hung up. The common good is not their particular cause that they're fighting for. The common good surpasses that. The common good is something that is tied back to human nature and to God's plan.
And again, that's where I think we're asking whose natural law, and this is what you're talking about, is natural law ultimately.
Correct.
Whose natural law is
it's
correct?
Whose natural law? And this is the confusion between law that is I'm blanking on the term here, but there's law that is just it's what we invent, and there's a law that comes from God. Natural law is God's law written into the universe and into human nature. It's not a question of, you know, your natural law versus my natural law. It's something that we can all come to through common philosophical reasoning.
And so an example would be that natural law says that biological form discloses purpose. So
yes.
Male and female.
That's one aspect of natural law, but now you're getting into a little bit of naturalism, which is a whole separate question. Natural laws isn't just the physical attributes built into nature. It's other things. It's the philosophical principles as well.
All right, but gender ideology theory leans on social sciences, not biology.
That's
and,
right.
And psychology, okay? And so...
And a twisting of science.
Yeah, and they're using a different toolkit, but what I'm getting at ultimately is that it's their thinking that their natural law is correct versus we knowing about the true natural law. And ultimately, I think it comes back to businesses should focus on, the San Francisco Giants are a baseball organization.
Right.
It's an entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, entertain me with baseball and stay out of everything
and
else.
That would be the common good. That would be their purpose. You know, to put it back into the context of Catholic social teaching. What is the baseball organization supposed to do? It's supposed to entertain people, provide a healthy outlet. that's its kind of contribution to the common
good.
The type
of entertainment that you're expecting to. You know, right. When you go to a baseball game, you expect to see baseball. Not a drag queen standing on the first baseline.
Yeah, they're clearly pushing an agenda, and it's not part of the common good. Now, and this is part of what's happening in our society today, that we're not having these debates about what is the common good. Like, what's really going to contribute to the thriving of American society? It's not pushing forward the agenda of a minority who's sort of suffering tremendously with the conditions that are put upon them because of the circumstances of their life, okay? That's not helping them. If we started having, I don't know, let's celebrate Cancer Week or Cancer Month to celebrate, you know, cancer, it's ridiculous because why are we going to celebrate the suffering of people? And when we enter into this whole realm, I mean, we need to have these debates about what truly is the common good of society.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. Did you hear the case about the lacrosse players smoking cigars in Massachusetts?
No, but it doesn't sound like something very healthy for his performance.
After Ipswich High School's graduation on June 7th, photos surface showing several boys in the lacrosse team smoking cigars on a local beach. They're in their graduation caps and gowns with a cigar in their mouth. Six of the seven students photographed were members of the lacrosse team. Even though the school's graduation had already happened, there's still a state semifinal game left to play. The Massachusetts Interscholastic Athletic Association got wind of the photo, and under their chemical health policy, which bars athletes from using tobacco during the season, all those players were ruled ineligible.
Wow.
Parents mounted defense saying the cigars were tobacco-free and they were actually homemade from tea leaves, and they therefore didn't violate the no tobacco rule. One parent brought a receipt showing tea bags being purchased as proof to the principal that this was really not tobacco. Well, district administrators later determined that the cigars were in fact real. They looked at the receipt and noticed that the timestamp had been smudged out. So they got a reprinted copy from the store showing the tea was purchased 20 minutes after the parents had been notified of the investigation. So six of the players suspended, some of the other players decided they weren't going to play out of solidarity. So the team had to forfeit their state semifinal. So how ridiculous is this whole thing that these boys are being subjected to this policy for an innocent, I think this is an innocent graduation photo after the fact. And yes, technically the season was still going, but the whole thing is ridiculous. The level of that the parents have gone to defend it, the level the district did to go investigate it, the whole thing is ridiculous. Let the guys play the semifinal lacrosse.
Oh, gosh. Yep. I more or less agree with you there. We could talk more, but yeah, it's a little ridiculous.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.